I can with Activate by Absa. I can get insurance cover online in less than 5 minutes and get up to 40% of my premiums back every month for driving well. I get a tracking device with stolen vehicle recovery, and I get to download the Activate app to monitor my driving and log my claim in minutes. Get Activate at absa.co.za and get your home, vehicle and contents insured in just 5 minutes. We do more so you can. That's Africanacity. Activate by Absa is a product of Absa Insurance Company and authorized FSP. T's and C's apply.
As you probably know, the Cabo Delgado region in particular has seen a surge in violent attacks by armed groups, escalating with the incidents in Palma at the end of March. And I think everybody's aware of that. What you might not appreciate, though, is quite how big the scale is of the humanitarian crisis that is unfolding as a result of that insurgency. Residents have had to flee their homes in this area by the thousand. And it's an area that didn't have a lot of comfort and ease and supportive development in place to begin with to be able to catch and hold and help those people who have been displaced. Rather, it's a part of the world that suffers from chronic underdevelopment, major health concerns, outbreaks of cholera and malaria, etc., on the rise in recent months as well, and extreme poverty. So how do you absorb thousands of people fleeing their homes from one village to the next when your own barely has enough to cope? And what is actually happening to all of those people who have been displaced? To help us get a clearer picture of that, I'm delighted to welcome on the line Isaac Pretorius, who is the Group Executive Director of JAM, Joint Aid Management. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us.
Hi, Papa. Great to be with you. Thank you.
So you are a humanitarian relief organization that I believe is currently working on the ground in Cabo Delgado. Before we talk about what the story is right now, won't you just reflect from us on how dire the situation was even before this displacement began? We're talking about an area with massive health concerns in particular.
Yeah, absolutely, Papa. So, people don't realize often just exactly the condition of Mozambique. Mozambique is still one of the poorest nations in the world, or most underdeveloped countries is another way of classifying it. And the country is extremely fragile. You know, it's very open to shocks of the nature of droughts, flooding. We were all aware of the cyclone that hit Mozambique last year and the impact of that. We see the devastation of things like malaria and cholera in the nation, which of course have increased. COVID on top of that has added another layer of complexity and impact into a nation that is fragile. And I think many of us don't realize that this country that is our neighbor, our literal neighbor, that so many people face the daily struggle of providing for their families, just simple food security, basic health care, water and sanitation. These are challenges that face many Mozambican families on a daily basis before this impact of these militant attacks in northern Mozambique.
Okay, thanks for setting the scene for us. Now let's talk about what has then been added into the mix and piled onto the problems already faced here. The recent armed attacks have displaced thousands and thousands of people. Isaac, I know it's not only the recent wave in Palma, but of course this dates back to around about 2017. The latest figure I saw quoted by the UN was something like 700,000 people who have fled their homes. Is that correct?
Absolutely. So that number is now over 700,000 internally displaced people in this northern Mozambique. So Cabo Delgado as a whole that have been displaced through these attacks over a three-year period now. This is not something that started this year or the end of last year. This has been going on for 3 years.
Isaac, what kind of assistance is JAM offering on the ground, and where are those people going to? Are they being absorbed into surrounding communities? Are they crossing the border, perhaps, into neighboring countries? What can you tell us about what you're seeing?
No, so the majority are being catered for locally. The Mozambican government has made areas of land available in the Montepuez area where people have been able to come in and be resettled. And for a lot of these families, this is not a temporary thing. This is not, the likes of what we might picture from watching movies, etc., of a tented IDP camp or refugee camp. These people are actually having to totally rebuild their lives. So they've been given an area of land, and they're settling on that land, and that's what we're helping them do. We're literally helping them rebuild their lives. That starts with emergency assistance, like making sure that children have sufficient nutrition, that there is water and sanitation and hygiene supply. But it then builds out into helping families to build homes, to actually construct new homes, to establish agriculture and other livelihoods mechanisms so that they can start to provide for themselves. And I don't know if people actually realize just how constant this flow is. So just in the last week, our staff on the ground told me that the numbers have been anywhere between the lowest was 638, and the highest day was 2,041 new IDPs that arrived in that area.
It's a staggering and, as you say, ongoing flow. I mean, what you're talking about here is starting entire new communities all over again. It's like my understanding is that part of the problem is that communities and families have been scattered because of the haphazard way in which people have literally had to flee with the clothes on their back. And the UN noting particular concern at the high number of unaccompanied children who have found their way to these camps. What about the what sort of efforts are underway to reunite families who've been split up by this?
Absolutely. So that is the most devastating part of this in many ways. It's women, it's children, it's the elderly, it's the disabled that are impacted the most in this crisis. And so we are, through the coordination mechanisms, we all work together as NGOs, as the UN agencies, with government. And so we're constantly working to register each of the IDPs that arrive in these areas and then to start to facilitate that process of reuniting families and bringing them back together. But many people are so traumatized. There's children, Pippa, who can't even speak. Mm. So here's a child who's on their own or a few children together that can't even tell you where their family is or what they've been through because they're so traumatized that they literally can't vocalize their own names.
And you can imagine the horror of what they have seen to have got them to that point as well. It's like, I mean, it's a very dire situation. Thank goodness there are organizations like yourself, Joint Aid Management, intervening to help. A final question for us, as you say, these are our neighbors we are talking about sitting here in South Africa. Are we doing enough to help? Is our government doing anything to help? Do you think what we should be doing anything or doing more to help?
I believe we can do a lot more. I believe our government should be playing a more active role. I think we as a South African nation need to realize that this is a potential risk to us as a nation as well from a security perspective, but that we also need to respond to our neighbors. And we have seen amazing response. You know, the YPO grouping, Young Presidents Organization, there's companies, I just think of one that comes to mind, a company in Durban called Coroseal, who just phoned us out of the blue and said, we have to be helping you to help our neighbors. And so South African businesses, South African individuals have responded amazingly.